Chapter 1. The Funeral. St. Rocco's Catholic Church, guardian of the East Lido neighborhood, had never seen a funeral like this. Priests from three different churches were on the altar to concelebrate the service, assisted by twice as many acolytes. Those who'd been unable to get a seat filled the side aisles and blocked the confessionals. There were so many bouquets of lilies that the air was heavy with their cloying scent. Jimmy Zambrano was finally being laid to rest. He had been one of the leaders of the Italian community in East Lido, a devout Catholic, a family man, a long-serving foreman of the Lido Premium Copper and Brass Rolling Mill, and a murder victim whose body was found in the Mohawk River after weeks of fruitless searching. Not only was all of East Lido packed into the church, but many who otherwise would never step foot in the Italian enclave were there as well. Nathan Packham, the owner of Lido Premium, sat with Henry Blick, who is the mill's all-powerful operations manager, as well as Packham's nephew and heir. They were joined by Mayor John Peabody and Lido's chief of police, a stout man in a formidable blue uniform. More uniforms indicated the New York State troopers who'd finally found Jimmy's body. Only the Procopio family, including Nick Procopio's bootlegger cousin, Benny Rotolo, was missing from the funeral. Whispers had swirled through East Lido before the service, but no one expected any of them to show. After all, it was Nick Procopio, the deputy foreman at Lido Premium, who'd strangled the man they were there to mourn. Half expecting a thunderbolt to arc over the altar and strike him dead for his sins, Luca Lombardo rose to his feet as the casket went by, held high on the shoulders of the pallbearers. The solemn-faced priests followed, one swinging the smoking incense burner. Next came three acolytes, two with large candles, and the one in the middle carrying a gold crucifix that was taller than the boy by more than an arm's length. The organ wailed out Ave Maria from the choir loft above. The music muffled the clanking of the brass burner and the last few involuntary sobs. As the casket passed each pew, the mourners filled out and processed up the center aisle after it. Jimmy's widow, Carmela Zambrano, and her children left the first pew, putting them directly behind the tall gold cross and guttering candles. Together with his wife Louise, Vito Spinelli, the owner of the Galliano Club and Luca's boss, accompanied the dead man's family. Luca joined the procession behind Vito, along with Guido Serra, the Galliano Club's stout doorman. The center aisle was soon swollen with people shuffling through the cloud of incense. The organ music set a measured pace. Luca found himself mentally intoning the words to Ave Maria, the language of the church coming back to him as if it was yesterday, instead of a decade ago, that he was a teen in Calabria, reluctantly studying for the priesthood. The double doors at the rear swung open, sending a welcome gust of fresh air into the church. The procession slowed to a stop. Luca caught a glimpse of his friend Carol Dombrowski supporting a corner of the casket. The pallbearers were crew chiefs at the Lido Premium Mill. The dead man had hired them all. Carol, who roomed in the same boarding house as Luca, was the only Polish crew chief. His blonde head stood out amid the sea of dark-haired Italians. Voices rose in a final prayer for Jimmy's soul. Once again, Luca remembered the words without effort. Nunc et in hora mortis nostre. Amen. He nearly choked on the final phrase. Now and at the hour of our death. The hour of Jimmy's death had been weeks ago. What might have been the hour of Luca's own death was all too recent. Up ahead, Vito put his hand on Carmela Zambrano's shoulder. She leaned into him. Vito's wife, Louise, hugged Sonny, the oldest Zambrano child. Luca felt the sting of loneliness. At least tonight, Vito was sober and clear-eyed, a fitting tribute to a close friend as well as his own role as the unofficial mayor of East Lido. The pallbearers carried the casket through the double doors. The crowd streamed out and filled the wide steps of the church to watch it be loaded into the hearse for the ride to the church's cemetery. There would be no interment. It was early November, and the ground in upstate New York was already frozen. Jimmy would rest in the St. Rocco Cemetery mausoleum until spring. Luca and Guido stayed with Vito and Louise Spinelli, forming a cluster by the Zambrano family as half a dozen flashbulbs went off. Reporters had not been allowed in the church, but that didn't mean that the funeral wasn't news. The Lido Premium representatives and the mayor murmured their sympathies to Carmela Zambrano and left in their fancy automobiles as more flashbulbs popped and startled the crowd. An informal receiving line formed. Carol and the other pallbearers spoke to her next. Vito's soup strainer mustache trembled with emotion as he turned to Luca.
Jimmy can rest in peace now, no?
That's right, Luca said. The boss was looking for reassurance. It's over.
We'll drink a toast with Carmela.
Luca nodded. A members-only outfit. Normally, the Galliano Club was closed on Sunday. Tonight, all the rules were out the window. Even women were invited. Carol made his way through the crowd. Luca handed over his friend's fedora, which had been left in the pew.
Come have a beer at the club, Luca said. Drink a toast to Jimmy.
You know I'll be at the Warsaw Club.
Not even Jimmy Zambrano's funeral could break down the wall between the Italian workers who belonged to the Galliano Club in East Lido and the Polish workers who patronized the Warsaw Club on the south side of the city, near Holy Angels Church. Before Luca could reply, a palpable ripple of unease went through the crowd. A space opened in the middle. Vito said something that Luca didn't catch. Carmela Zambrano gasped. Maria Teresa Procopio was on the sidewalk, chin held high. The widow of the man who'd killed Jimmy was a slight woman who nonetheless was known to be more than a match for her late husband. A cinnamon sunset was stealing the light, but Luca could still see the woman's red eyes and lines of grief aging her face. Dusky hair was scraped into a bun, and a long black dress showed below the hem of her knee-length coat. Thin hands clutched a beaded purse against her chest like a shield. Oddly enough, Luca was reminded of his dead wife, Raffaella, who was still a teenager when she died.
On behalf of my children and myself, Maria Teresa said to Carmela, loud enough for everyone on the church steps to hear, I offer my condolences for your loss. Your Jimmy, may his soul rest in peace, was a good man.
Thank you.
Carmela's voice was surprisingly strong.
That's all I come to say.
I understand.
Maria Teresa's gaze slid to Luca. He touched the brim of his fedora in acknowledgement.
Lucky Lombardo,
Maria Teresa said with ice in her voice. The newspapers had gleefully dubbed him Lucky for his narrow escape from Nick Procopio's copper wire garret, the same wire that killed Jimmy. Clubbed on the head by policeman Sean O'Malley's nightstick, Nick's dying words had been, in the river. The clue that led to the eventual discovery of Jimmy's body in the Mohawk River. Lucky. Luca hated the nickname.
Everybody's hero now.
Maria Teresa spat hard. The gobbet landed in front of Luca. He didn't move. Luca had nothing to say to Maria Teresa Procopio, although there were burning questions he wished she could answer. Did she know her husband was in the bootleg beer business with Benny Rotolo? When did she know that Nick killed Jimmy? The same night? And most important of all, did she know that Nick didn't put Jimmy's body in the river but left it behind the Galliano Club for someone else to find? Maria Teresa walked away. The crowd remained silent, stunned at her audacity. 2 weeks ago, she'd been another East Lido wife and mother,
Now, she was the widow of a murderer, and scandalous enough to show her face at the victim's funeral. Vito cleared his throat and took Carmela's elbow. His actions broke the spell, and there was a general clatter down the stairs. An undulating line of wool coats was soon strung out along Hamilton Street as the crowd made its way to the Galliano Club. No weeping, just low murmurs and the scratch of shoe leather on sidewalks gritty with sand to prevent skidding on winter ice. Luca heard Procopio murmured a few times. Nick's funeral was the next day, but few would go.
Hey, Lucky!
It was Bill Gifford, one of the reporters from the Lido Daily Clipper.
Lucky Lombardo, what do you think? Did Procopio kill the woman from the river too?
How would I know? Luca tried to push past. He'd been as surprised as anyone when divers pulled the half-naked dead woman from the Mohawk River after finding Jimmy's body.
Did he confess like he confessed to Zambrano?
No, Luca said shortly and plowed ahead. He unlocked the front door of the club at 601 Hamilton Street. The crowd streamed through the vestibule and into the saloon, shedding coats and hats and scarves. Wives and daughters marveled at the long mahogany bar, brass footrail, and man-sized bottle of golden liqueur Galliano mounted on the wall that gave the club its name. Luca whipped off his coat and started filling pitchers from the keg of beer hidden in the clever well under the bar. Tossing aside his jacket, Sonny Zambrano came behind the bar too.
I can do that. A senior at Lido Free Academy, the kid washed dishes and swept the floor at the club after school.
Sonny was like his late father, wiry frame, Roman nose, and a big appetite for work.
Nobody expects you to work tonight, Luca said.
Sonny wiped his eyes with a cuff of his shirt. Put me to work or I'll go crazy. Luca handed him an empty pitcher. Sonny began filling it while Luca opened jugs of farm-pressed cider and bottles of tonic from the West End Brewery in Utica. The saloon was jammed. Carmela Zambrano was surrounded by the other ladies. Everyone soon had a glass in hand. Luca poured fizzy lemon-lime Ricky for himself and Sonny.
To Jimmy, Vito said, raising his voice to be heard above the drone of voices.
He held his glass high.
Jimmy Zambrano, friend, father, husband, foreman. May St. Peter keep him too busy to talk about our sins until we meet again. Salute. Salute.
The words filled the saloon, rattling the pictures of the club's baseball team above the dark green paneling and the empty bottles on glass shelves that winged away from the liqueur Galliano. Clouds of tobacco smoke scuttered across the pressed tin ceiling. Still behind the bar, Luca touched his glass to Sonny's. The speech had hit the right balance between sadness and humor, and truth. More toasts were made. The weight of sorrow was replaced with relief that the mystery of Jimmy's long disappearance was finally over. There was a sense of justice, too. A killer was dead. Life would go on. Jimmy's legacy meant that the Zambrano family would always have a place in the community. Vito replaced Sonny behind the bar so the kid could empty ashtrays. For Luca, the next hour was like old times. Laughter and tobacco smoke swirled throughout the saloon as he and Lido poured beer and filled bowls with pickled onions, pretzels, and candied lemon peel. They opened box after box of Torrone nougat candy. Stories about Jimmy kept coming. Everyone eager to share something funny or clever. The crew chiefs held the floor retelling Jimmy's mishap with the chemical mix that ate the leather fingers off his work gloves and famously marked his work boots with pink whorls. How he kept the mill going with double-strength coffee during the grueling extra shifts to complete the Boston Maritime contract. Gio Tulipano topped them all, with the account of teaching Jimmy how to operate the crane that serviced the giant wire roller machines. The crane hook got stuck in the number 4 roller for an entire day as Jimmy sweated bullets and invented new ways to swear in both English and Italian. After 2 hours, the crowd began to thin. Luca saw a contingent of wives, including Carmela Zambrano and Vito's wife Louise, head for the door. Are you all right? Luca intercepted the group by the vestibule. Can I do anything?
Thank you for taking care of Sonny,
Carmela said with a nod toward her son across the room. Even in a sack-like black dress, she was a handsome woman who had displayed a spine of steel during the search for Jimmy. Luca swallowed a rush of stomach-curdling guilt.
He's a good kid.
You're keeping him that way.
Tutoring him in Latin, too.
Carmela touched Luca's cheek.
You're the club now, Luca. The way Vito used to be. He's all right tonight. Everyone knows he's sick. If it wasn't for you, I don't know what would happen. This place is the center of everything in East Lido. It's everything to me, too,
Luca managed to say, which was the truth. Carmela made a show of looking over Luca's shoulder at the crowded saloon.
Where's your girl? Sonny tells me her name is Tessa.
Luca gave a smile. Tess Kennedy was his Tessa.
She's in Saratoga, he explained. Her aunt's taking the cure. She'll be back soon.
She'd better hurry if she wants to keep you,
Carmela smiled back.
Sonny tells me you get plenty of letters.
Lady letters, he calls them.
Ladies writing you letters because they saw your picture in the newspaper.
Luca shook his head. I'm not interested in those ladies.
Get married, Luca. You shouldn't be alone.
Guido opened the door for her. Carmela joined her friends outside. Luca watched the women pass by the big glass plate window with Galliano Club, established 1912, traced in curving gold letters across it. It took all his self-control not to run after Carmela and beg her forgiveness. Tell her that Nick Procopio's last words, in the river, weren't a confession after all. Tell her who was really responsible for putting Jimmy's body in the river. Her good friends Vito Spinelli and Luca Lombardo. Luca would never forget finding Jimmy's body in the alley behind the club. The mad scramble to hide it in Vito's Packard from the Antonelli brothers when they came to deliver bootleg beer. Rumors and the dawning belief that someone was trying to frame Vito for murder. The first impulse was to take Jimmy's body to the church. When that proved impossible, Vito and Luca tried the mill and were stymied yet again. Jimmy's secret fishing spot was the last resort. Luca said a prayer before they pushed the body over the riverbank. He'd never forget the splash. Luca carried that sound inside himself, like a stone in his heart. It wasn't the oldest stone, nor the heaviest. Those belonged to the night he killed a man named Umberto Orsini.